Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 3.
Veterinarians have butt fetishes. How else can you explain why they insist on sticking something up an animal's keister, especially when it's obvious the problem lies elsewhere? Both times I was sent to the kitty ER, I received a royal ass probing. As if the crushed paw on the first trip and the bruises and lacerations the second time weren't painful enough. Dogs don't seem to mind this treatment. I swear, they'll wag their tails at anything, even when they've got a yardstick crammed up there. My theory is veterinarians do this just to establish who's the boss. Since small animals like cats can't defend themselves against this type of anal blitzkrieg, we have to lay there and just take it. On the subject of butts, have you noticed the only cute ones are attached to the back end of felines? Mine is a perfect star, discreetly covered by my lusciously striped tail. Dog butts, on the other hand, look like an image of Homer Simpson dressed in a fur coat. Why dogs constantly lick their own caboose must be an inside joke. What I can't understand is why humans tolerate this behavior. Don't they have the ability to escape an examination that is taking a turn for the worse? And what of the doctors who perform these nasty acts of intrusion? To my chagrin, I've had the opportunity to meet one such person. On the surface, Scotty Sphincter appears to be a docile man. Thankfully, this rectal surgeon doesn't seem to have a thing for cat butts. I met Harriet, the kitten of my cotton candy dreams, at an Easter egg hunt hosted by Scotty. He had purchased Legacy Grove, the place where I once lived with my first human, Nancy Neptune. It was a brilliant, deliciously crisp spring morning. Eggs and treats had been scattered throughout the orchard. I normally don't like to be up early, but this being a holiday, I thought it was only proper that I put in an appearance. Harriet, sensing a smorgasbord of delectable snacks, had come over to forage in the fields. What she found instead was me, the new love of her life, along with a few hard-boiled eggs none of the children cared to eat once they'd been found.
Chapter 3. Scotty Sphincter.
The last thing I want to do is squander my summer slicing and dicing people's rectal cavities, especially while I'm simultaneously fighting a jackass named Drew Compton. I was okay with spending my weekends jamming at Rectal Fest, but I hated the idea of being away from my gorgeous new bride. I gave up living a secret life for Lent, even though I'm not Catholic. My newfound transparency only lasted long enough for me to get remarried. Now I'm back to sneaking around, hiding things from my kids and wife. Life as an outed rock star can be rough. Trying to pay the bills for my rock star lifestyle is even rougher. In the marital arena, I've got the full Monty. On the one hand, there is Blue, my smoking hot wife of less than a year. On the bottom end of the spectrum, there's Colette, a notoriety-sucking piranha who I divorced on the basis of irreconcilable sleaziness. Because of number two, my life is once again in the toilet. I thought if I paid Colette enough money, she'd find someone else's life to tank. But no! Colette is going to keep freight hopping the fame train until she derails everyone, including her own children. Lexi, my 13-year-old daughter, naively clings to the notion that Colette is a misunderstood mother who is just trying to do the best she can. Of course, she's seen the photos, which prove otherwise, but Lexi has a tender soul. Brandon, my 15-year-old, not so much. He's old enough to choose the amount of humiliation he's willing to swallow. Colette's decision to appear on Celebrity Cougars wasn't something Brandon was going to digest easily. He doesn't even know the half of it. A few weeks ago, I was notified by a law firm in Connecticut that I may be facing a paternity suit. From the beginning, I was suspicious of Colette's pregnancy with Brandon. I'd had a heart-wrenching crush on Colette all through high school. When she took a sudden interest in me during a break from med school, I pounced in every sense of the word. You don't have to be a doctor to be able to count the weeks in a woman's pregnancy. I knew there was a good chance Brandon wasn't mine, but to make sure, I discreetly had some blood tests done at the hospital. I didn't get the news I wanted, but I signed the birth certificate anyway. When a series of depraved photos of Colette circulated among the students at Brandon's school, I filed for divorce and got custody of the kids. Even though I'd rather lick boogers off the bottom of a first grader's desk than deal with Colette, I do think it's important for my children to have some kind of relationship with her. Not that I trust her alone with them. I insist that Colette's parents be around when the kids visit. Then Colette decided to go on Celebrity Cougars. Before they'd even released a trailer teasing the show, the paparazzi started badgering my family. Because of this, Brandon is refusing to spend the summer with Colette, and I'm backing his decision. Brandon is unaware of the paternity suit, and I'm busting my patootie to keep it that way. My divorce from Colette hemorrhaged my bank account to nearly lethal levels. At the time, I was willing to agree to anything just to get custody of the kids. To be fair, Colette wasn't the only one who racked up this appalling amount of debt. I'm quite persnickety when it comes to anything involving my band or my studio, so I have a habit of spending large. I was just getting back on my feet when I started dating Blue. I knew she wasn't after my money, but I was crushing on her so bad I went a little loco. I didn't pussyfoot around when it came to my proposal. I bought a mammoth-sized diamond and orchestrated a glorious surprise party in the ballroom at the Diamonds in the Desert Casino. One of Blue's favorite movies is an aquatic comedy called The Incredible Mr. Limpet, starring Don Knotts. I thought it would be a cute theme for my event. Like The Incredible Mr. Limpet, I have a tendency to go a little overboard. My under-the-sea wedding proposal seemed to put a finer point on this. Meredith Andrews, owner of Diamonds in the Desert, tried to get me to scale things back, but I was on a bender. Professional actresses, dressed as mermaids, were brought in to serve hors d'oeuvres. A string quartet was on hand to serenade Blue during the proposal. Even the decorations were decadent. Dozens of cylinder-shaped aquariums sat on freestanding pedestals. I had the walls and ceiling covered in shimmery, seafoam gauze shaped like waves. The whole place looked like an underwater lagoon. Completely ignoring my financial missteps of the past, I splurged on every swanky detail. I spent more than $1,500 just on bubble lights for our guests to hold when Blue was brought in. The string quartet was definitely worth the money. While they played, I kneeled on the floor with the ring box. Blue was so stunned, her whole body was shaking. I had a hard time getting the ring on her finger. This was just the start of me putting my money where my mouth is, though I'm not sure who I was trying to impress. Blue and her twin, Moon, were born on Halloween. A few days after my proposal, we went to a big party at Gecko's Gulch, Moon's house outside of Naval, Utah. I felt like $1 million when it was my turn to give Blue her birthday present. I waited until my kids and Moon's twins passed out their gifts before handing over mine. It didn't look like a big deal, beyond a card and a fancy envelope, but tucked inside was the deed to Blue's old house at Legacy Grove. She truly wasn't expecting this. My entire body lit up as I watched Blue holding the deed, unable to say anything at all. I had ulterior motives when it came to buying back Blue's old house. Ever since revealing my identity as a member of the Rectal Surgeons, our privacy has been seriously compromised. I wanted a place for our family to get out of the spotlight. Legacy Grove fit the bill. Blue had lived there during the years she worked as a novelist. Moon's husband, Randall, bought the place when Blue moved out and turned it into an orange sherbet factory. Randall has always been a tad fruity, so I had a hard time picturing him in the manufacturing business, even one that made orange ice cream. Randall has now moved on to being a hairstylist, a job that's far more suited to his flamboyant personality. For a few months last year, Moon allowed our mutual friend, Nancy Neptune, and her scratchy cat, Skitters, to stay at Legacy Grove. Within days of moving in, that hissing hairball had ripped the place to shreds. Despite this, Nancy somehow managed to pawn Skitters off onto Moon's twins when she landed a job in New York. I surmise Skitters has since undergone a grand reformation because Gecko's Gulch is still in one piece. It would be hugely unwise for Skitters to tangle with Moon. Blue, incidentally, can't stand Skitters. She's none too fond of Nancy Neptune either.
Hang tight, kitties. We'll be back in a scratch. In the mood for a killer audiobook? Quirky Killers by Adele Park is the story of a serial bride who sends her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Too bad the cops don't see the humor in this and arrest this woman who is just trying to make sure everyone gets to meet God. Quirky Killers. Get it today on audible.com. You'll die laughing.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio.
Before my ex-wife, Colette, took up extracurricular activities with a student at Brandon's school, she had an ongoing affair with Drew Compton, the worthless schmuck who is now forcing me into a paternity suit. I understood Drew was likely Brandon's father, but it chafed me to no end to find out Colette continued to see him after we got married. I was on the road with the rectal surgeons when a friend of mine tipped me off that Colette was still crashing her custard truck into Drew's dingy garage. Infuriated, I went on a revenge date with Nancy Neptune. I didn't even know Blue at the time, but when she figured out my connection with Nancy, it nearly blitzed our chances of having a relationship. Nancy's former cat, Skitters, is the most self-entitled animal I've ever met. When Nancy lived in Naval, she took Skitters everywhere she went, so he was used to being in a lot of public settings. Whenever Skitters is bored and wants a change of scenery, he hops in whatever car is heading out. Skitters even rides in a cargo bin on one of the ATVs at Gecko's Gulch. I don't know if Blue dislikes all cats, but she does nothing to disguise her utter loathing of Skitters, perhaps because of his association with Nancy Neptune. After viewing the damage Skitters caused at Legacy Grove, I can't say I blame her. The morning after I gave Blue the title, all hands were on deck to de-skitterize it. We had stayed up late celebrating Halloween birthdays at Gecko's Gulch, but that didn't deter Blue from waking everyone up while it was still dark the next morning, which was All Saints' Day. Blue is fascinated with anything mystical. The pre-dawn house blessing at Legacy Grove was right up her alley. Brandon was in a foul mood over having to get up so early, but his buddy, Taj, acted like the cosmic ritual was the neatest thing since individually packaged cheese slices. To Blue's consternation, one of the twins brought Skitters along. He seemed to be on his best behavior that morning, perhaps sensing one little misstep could have disastrous consequences. Blue had everyone stand in a circle around the house. As the sun was rising, Blue passed around lighted sticks of sage to use as a spiritual cleansing agent. The morning was misty, blending with the smoky sage. I'm not what anyone would call a New Ager, but I was entranced by the spicy smells and orangish-red sun rays glowing through the mist. Unfortunately, that warm, Deepak Chopra sort of feeling only lasted until we got back to Las Vegas. During a private discussion about our upcoming wedding, Blue mentioned she'd like to have it at Legacy Grove. I had pictured something a little more majestic, but that wasn't the big sticking point. I was eager to cash in on Blue's agreement to marry me and didn't want to wait until Legacy Grove was livable. It could take months, maybe even a year, to erase all signs of Skitters, especially since he was still hanging around. I'm no fuddy-duddy, but because of my kids, shacking up with Blue was not an option. Having her continue to live in a suite at the Diamonds in the Desert Casino wasn't going to fly with me either. I wanted Blue in my bed, in my house, pronto. Blue and I had our worst fight ever over how the wedding should go down. It seemed like a lousy way to start off our new life together. In the end, I conceded to a late December wedding at Legacy Grove, followed by a simple reception at Gecko's Gulch. It was hardly what I envisioned. So many people had been involved with the proposal that I was worried it would look like I was cheaping out. Blue was marrying a rock star, but she sure didn't know how to party like one. Decimating my wedding plans wasn't the worst of it. With the precision of a surgeon, Blue sliced into my heart about the ring. Apparently, it was too big. What? Was she freaking kidding me? My ego was rupturing. If I wasn't a doctor, I would have been spooked by the physical symptoms this conversation was causing. My heart pounded wildly, then abruptly downshifted to a pace that was near cardiac arrest. My hands and feet went numb, and my left eye twitched, spastically. Blue hadn't been wearing her ring when we went to Gecko's Gulch, claiming she needed to have it sized, more like downsized. I felt like a cinder block had been dropped on my head when Blue asked to return the ring, politely using the word gaudy. She was crying when she said it, so what could I do? We spent nearly every weekend after Halloween at Gecko's Gulch preparing for the wedding. The compound is flanked by the polygamist community of Zion Flats to the north and the Mormon city of Navel to the south. Due to these socially undesirable neighbors, Blue's sister relishes company from the outside world. For this reason, we felt comfortable inviting the Wakefields to join us at Gecko's Gulch. During the day, Brandon, Taj, and his dad, Tom, helped me clean up the yard and orchard at Legacy Grove. I hired some men from Navel to paint the outside of the house and rehab one of the bathrooms. The rest had to wait. The wedding turned out way better than I expected. Blue made it into a two-day family affair that left everyone buzzing with happiness. My kids were happy, I was married to the woman of my dreams, and the band had recorded a killer comeback CD. My ex-wife, Colette, wasn't going to stand for it. She could suck the life out of a cactus. Things were going so well, it took all the fun out of my plans to go on tour this summer with the rectal surgeons. I detested the idea of leaving my bewitching bride for even one second, but I needed to protect my family from a few things that were threatening to crush us all. I'm not just talking about the obscene amount of debt I had once again racked up, but also this situation involving Drew Compton, Brandon's biological father. It galls me to have to refer to this stool softener as Brandon's father. Colette never adhered to any rules of engagement when it came to doing battle with me as a spouse. She took pleasure in bombarding me with brutal statements designed to annihilate my soul. As a result, Brandon has a peripheral idea that I'm not his biological father. My objective now is to make sure this isn't affirmed in a very public manner. When it comes to the entertainment business, I'm a lot more plugged in than Colette will ever be. I was tipped off that she was going on Celebrity Cougars before she ever talked to the kids about it. My sources claim she barely made the cut. The one bit of drama Colette could contribute was to reveal I'm not Brandon's biological father. My response was to lawyer up. Drew Compton still lives in my hometown of Hartford, Connecticut. My goal this summer is to flush out this knuckle-dragger so he'll stop bothering my family. Colette was awarded our Hartford McMansion in the divorce. The first thing she did was take the equity out. Then she listed it, even though the housing market was collapsing. I knew Colette would snatch whatever offer she got, so I privately submitted a lowball bid and won. I just couldn't stand the thought of losing all the money I'd invested in this vulgar, gold-gilded monstrosity. I hated the idea of moving back in and was searing with resentment over the extra work I'll have to do to pay for it. Rectal Fest only happens on the weekends, so I was frantically trying to make up for lost money by seeing patients at my old clinic in Hartford. The stage productions for Rectal Fest are so over the top, we barely break even. I sincerely hope fans of the rectal surgeons really dig Love and Life on Uranus, because digital downloads and CD sales are the only way to slide into the profit column. In an effort to expand our market, I hired Blue's old boyfriend to be on the promotions team. Stephen Finch is a self-proclaimed ganjapreneur and notorious skirt chaser. Stephen is his own best customer at a medical marijuana dispensary he operates in Boulder, Colorado. None of the guys in the band smoke pot, but most of the roadies do, so having Stephen around is handy in a number of ways. My favorite being that he's willing to help me put the screws to Drew Compton. Of course, Blue doesn't know anything about me hiring Stephen or taking on yet another house payment. The thing that's really got my knickers in a knot is the idea of visitation. I have legal custody of Brandon, so if Drew keeps jabbing away with this paternity suit, I'm going to sue for child support. Roasted pigs will fly before he'll ever cough up any dough, but Drew needs to know I'm not screwing around here. There is no way I want this cretin anywhere near my son. Several years back, I had the displeasure of treating one of Drew's ex-wives for a horrifying injury that was obviously not accidental. If Drew would do that to a woman he was slapping sloppies with, there's no telling how he'd react to a mouthy teenager. In the event that I lose the paternity contest, I need something to dissuade the court from granting Drew visitation. With God as my witness, Drew Compton is going to regret the day he tinkered with this rectal surgeon.
Skitters the cat hates Blue McKenna more than digesting hairballs. That's why he's especially irked to find that even in death, Blue won't give him a break. Adding insult to injury, Skitters is the only one who can help Blue find her way out of a hellish nightmare involving the DMV. Skitters can't get in a decent nap until he helps Blue cross over. And that's the rub. Get all the scratchy details in Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted by Adele Park.
In case you haven't noticed, you've been ghosted.
Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Get ghosted today on Audible, Downpour, and Spotify. Meow, kitties.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.